I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So do you trust your Uncle Sam? Do you trust our government?
No.
Charles, Jim, do you trust our government?
Absolutely not.
Andy?
No.
Charles?
No, of course not. Not on your life.
So that's is that why gold's important?
You know, it amazes me, Robert, how many times human beings have to go through the same experience. They've been flim-flammed since the Great Khan of China. They've been flim-flammed in Greece. They've been flim-flammed all over the years for thousands of years by these fake money schemes.
This is the Debunking Economics Podcast with Steve Keen and Phil Dobby.
Well, that was Robert Kiyosaki from the Rich Dad Radio Show, a podcast that has, it's fair to say, many, many, many more listeners than we have. Talking to his mates who, as far as I can tell, all have an interest in selling gold, telling us that we should buy gold because paper money is worthless. You can't even wipe your bottom on it because it's not big enough. And by accepting it, you are putting your trust in the government. So have they got a point, or are these gold bugs no different to people going up into the hills and building underground bunkers for when society collapses? Any day now, apparently. But a lot of people do believe in gold, like Zimbabwe, who believe the new currency that they've got will be acceptable because it's backed by gold. But how much gold? As much as there is money in circulation. So how does that work? That's this week on the Debunking Economics Podcast. Aaron from Aldershot, I love the alliteration, has asked this question about Zimbabwe announcing a new currency backed by gold. He wants to know if it'll be advantageous to their economy and any implications or impact it's going to have on the rest of Africa. So for those people who don't know, Zimbabwe, they've had a problem in the past in that people don't trust their currency. This has been going on for a while. That's why more than 90% of transactions in the country are in foreign currencies. Now, they hope to remedy that by launching this new local currency backed by gold and foreign currencies, which will all be held as reserves by the central bank. In fact, the new currency is called the ZIG, which is short for Zimbabwe Gold, ZIG, with a little lowercase I. It all looks very trendy. And banks will be expected to transfer all their old Zimbabwean dollars into ZIG immediately, and everyone else needs 21 days to make the move. Now, this has already happened. Well, within that 21 days, supposedly all Zimbabwean dollars sitting in central banks, or in commercial banks, I should say, have now all moved over to the ZIG. So they hope the confidence of gold backing their currency will reassure people and it will stop inflation problems. So two questions. First of all, Steve, I mean, is it going to lift confidence? And does confidence in a currency if you can do that, does that hold back and control inflation? Let's look at the, first of all, the question. Is this going to help confidence in their economy, in their currency?
Well, look, if you have a situation like Zimbabwe, have a runaway inflation, then people, and if there's an alternative currency you can use for exchange, such as the American dollar, then people are not going to want to use the local currency, and they will be using the American. And if you want to get rid of the inflation, you can do several things. You can have a currency board where you link your currency directly to an exchange rate, fixed exchange rate to the US, to the US currency, or about a bundle of foreign currencies. That's one of the ways you can.
So you peg it to a foreign currency.
You peg it, yeah, and that sort of thing can mean that the runaway, the accelerating inflation, which comes out of people, you know the prices are going to go up, so you put your prices up in the morning, and then everybody has to follow your lead, and so on and so forth. That hyperinflation is the sort of thing which you can restrain by saying, okay, we're going to link our currency to either gold or a basket of other currency, then it's a fixed exchange rate. So it can you know, I would accept the argument. And I think this is the sort of thing that Jeffrey Sachs was involved in at some stage, one of the successful interventions he made, stopping hyperinflation. So at least in that front, it makes sense.
And they have to have the gold. So they have to... I mean, and in which,
that's the issue. Yeah, one of the issues. Yeah.
So, I mean, you'd have to have as much gold as you've got currency in circulation, wouldn't you?
Yeah, well, there's two issues about that. One is actually having the gold, but the other is the exchange rate you determine between your currency and the gold. And you see some people who are advocates of either modern monetary theory or people who were aware of the fact that the government can create money way, way back before MMT became a three-letter acronym, TLA. And that includes Henry Ford and Thomas Edison. And Edison people were saying money should be backed by gold. Gold is money, et cetera, et cetera. I've heard that said by a British MP in a meeting I was in for trying to explain how money was created to him. But the exchange rate, as Thomas Edison was told about, we should have silver backing the currency and so on and so forth. He said, look, the price of silver is set by the fact that it's used by the government to back the currency. He said, there's a particular stage, I think, in America's history where the dollar was backed by silver. And he said, when it was taken off the silver standard, the price of silver halved. So a major part of the demand setting the price is, in fact, the fact that the government is using it as a form of currency. So that's one issue. But the main one is, how do you get it? And like, there are three basic ways you can get gold. One, you can find it in your own backyard. So you have a gold mine, you dig it up, and that's where the gold cycle comes in.
And Zimbabwe has a bit of that, but not a great, they are, but yeah. Not enough, I don't think, to back their entire currency.
The second way you can get it is by invading somebody else and stealing their carat gold. And that's what the Spanish and the Portuguese and the English did to the gold of the Incas and the Mexicans and so on. It's a bit more difficult these days. You've got to be a global power to get away with that. The third way, and this is the one that's going to be relevant now, is to have a trade surplus, where you use that trade surplus to accumulate gold. And that's, I think, the issue for Zimbabwe. I don't know what its current trade balance is, probably negative. It's probably having far more imports than exports. But if it's going to accumulate gold to use that as a basis for its currency, then it has to have a trade surplus.
Yeah, and if it doesn't, then it's using money. It's using money that's in circulation. It's using the government's money, which is money that could be spent within the country, is being used to acquire gold, which is being used to back the currency that they want to use. I mean, that just doesn't stack up, does it?
It's a potential reason for deflation. And suddenly you don't have enough. The money supply is falling. And that's what, I'm not going to say that I can predict what's going to happen in Zimbabwe. But that's one of my fears. If you've got a government trying to buy gold, which you're using its own currency to do so, that's got all sorts of issues about whether it can actually maintain that currency in a regime of floating exchange rates, or it's got to be running a trade surplus. And if it's not running a trade surplus, it's bleeding gold, and therefore the amount of gold that exists to back the currency is falling, and therefore the value of the currency is falling. Now, that could get you back potentially into hyperinflation, or it can cause you just a collapse in aggregate demand and a depression.
Well, I mean, they already are in hyperinflation, aren't they? So the latest inflation rate for Zimbabwe for March year on year was 55.3%. They've been in hyperinflation since the 90s, really, haven't they? I mean, I would think back. I mean, it really started to go wrong when they chucked all the white farmers off their land. And they were turfed off their land. I've written down here, pun intended. They were turfed off their land, and black owners who didn't know how to work the land took over, and so productivity fell. So there was this big decline in agricultural output. And then as a result of all of that as well, they had sanctions imposed on the regime from the United States, from the EU. So none of that has really helped. And then since then, there's been no confidence in the economy. And it's confidence in the economy rather than confidence in the currency, isn't it? So you can replace the currency, but you've still got to have confidence in the economy. And that's not going to be fixed by having a currency that's backed by gold.
Yeah, and that's the real problem. I mean, the fact that you had a crash in the productivity of the economy is what set off the hyperinflation. And this is the usual case, and it's quite a valid one, that proponents of modern monetary theory make, that hyperinflation is not due to you printing too much money. It's due to you destroying resources. And the Zimbabwean case is quite a sad one because it was done, you know, the alleged reason for doing it was, to redress decades of racism and give the blacks the access to the land. But there were two failings with that. One is that, the black farmers certainly would be, there's no colour basis in whether you can be a good or a bad farmer, but there was a colour basis in whether you were learned how to farm and you had the knowledge, the acquired knowledge. So when you handed it over people who didn't have the accumulated knowledge of the white farmers who were thrown off, of course the output level fell. It would happen if you gave it a blue, black or brindle, it wouldn't matter. So that destroyed a large part of the productive capacity. Then you're running a trade deficit. Money is going out of the country for because you're buying more imports and exports. And then off goes the hyperinflation, and they've been locked there ever since. So, I think that's the issue that you're going to have. The only way it's going to succeed is not just that you've gone across to gold as backing your currency. You've also got to be running a trade surplus. And I don't, that's going to be with a question mark. Can they actually get to that point? I've got a feeling they won't.
Because otherwise they can't create money. I mean, that's the problem, isn't it? If they've got a certain amount of gold and they say that's it, that maps to exactly how much currency there is in circulation, then they can't expand the money supply unless they buy more gold. Yeah. Where does the money from that come from unless the government borrows money to pay for that?
Yeah. So this is the whole philosophy of making money based on gold, well, partly comes out of people believing money should be a commodity. And that's what I've forgotten the guy named Stephen somebody or other, who's a conservative member of the Conservative Party, is one of these gold bugs, believing that money is gold, period. And everything else we're using is just money is a veil over gold from that point of view. But what it means is you cannot, the government cannot increase the money supply. Now, one thing I haven't worked out, and actually I'd probably play with this and find out with Minsky, is that does that stop the private sector creating money? And I've got a feeling it doesn't, because they can still, if they can make loans in Zimbabwean, what are they called again?
Zigs. Yeah. But yeah, if they borrowed money, if they went to their bank and borrowed money to invest, I mean, the central bank governor has said he's committed to ensuring the amount of gold and foreign currency. So it's not just gold, they're holding a basket of foreign currencies as well. But that the amount of that in reserve matches the value of the local currency. So he doesn't get around that problem. So if somebody goes to a bank and borrows a great deal of money, then the central bank's still going to, by that description, is going to say, oh, well, we better get some more gold or foreign currency to match that loan that's been made, which has expanded the money supply.
That also depends upon their actions relating to the holding of reserves and whether they match reserves to loans or not. Because again, this is, I'm caught up in writing a reply to George Selgin, I think he's called, Selgin, who's a member of the Cato Institute and conservative Austrian style, Austrian stroke neoclassical monetary theorist. And he's trying to argue the case that the government controls the money supply because it controls reserves and reserves control lending, all of which is completely false when you put it in sense of accounting. What I'm coming back and saying is that the capacity of the banks to create money is not based upon the amount of reserves they hold. So you've got an independent system of money creation. And that would apply, I think, in the case even where the government is deciding to try to say its spending is backed by gold or its money is backed by gold. Its government's capacity to create money would be constrained by that. I don't think the private sector would be. So you could still get private sector bubbles. And we saw this in the 19th century when a lot of countries tried to maintain a gold standard, and you still had booms and crashes because people were borrowing money to speculate on rising asset prices or to buy into the next big thing, things like railways and steam engines and so on. So I think it's a system which only constrains the government money creation. It doesn't constrain the private sector money creation.
Actually, he's saying the amount that's held in reserve, actually. He's saying that the amount of gold should match the amount of money held in reserve in the central bank, presumably. So that's not the total value of all currency. So does that mean that they can expand through giving loans if there's the confidence in the economy and the confidence in the currency?
I don't know. I think the private sector could still do it. I haven't bothered modelling it because no country, even though all the gold bugs are forever saying money is gold and money should be gold, nobody's actually implemented a system that had it, so I haven't bothered trying to model it. Now that Zimbabwe is doing it, maybe when I've got something that I think people call it spare time, I must try to find some. When I find some of that, maybe I should go and dig up a hole in the ground and see if I can find spare time in the hole rather than gold.
Well, you got up at four this morning, didn't you? You could have got up at two.
I've got a bit of spare time. Yeah, that's true. There you go. Yeah.
So a single zig. Is worth getting. I love the name Zig. It just sounds, particularly the lowercase I, it just seems very trendy, doesn't it? Getting ziggy with it. A single Zig is worth about 7 US cents, apparently, close to a milligram of gold. And they bought 2.5 tons of gold, which I think is about 175 million, I think. But gold is notoriously volatile. So if you've got a wallet full of Zig and all of a sudden the gold loses 25%, for example, then presumably my Zigs are worth 25% less as well. And if you're selling in Zig, does that mean you've got to put your prices up 25% to compensate? Gold is not stable. That's the thing.
Yeah, well, this is the other thing there were times in history when gold was used as currency. So you actually physically carry gold with you. All the idea, the robberies of the famous American West gunslingers holding up a stagecoach and getting the physical gold out. That was stealing gold nuggets and so on. And then you supposedly getting them assayed and using them to go shopping in the local blacksmith. That's when physically using gold. But the normal situation is some currency which is supposedly linked to gold. And of course, now with the scale of the global economy now, the sheer number of people compared to what it was in the 1800s, there's no way you could use physical gold because you'd be working with slivers of the damn stuff that is so small you couldn't see it to try to have a gold-based currency. The amount of gold in the planet, not just the gold in circulation, but you can measure it in Olympic swimming pools. I think there's something like about 2 or 3 Olympic swimming pools worth of physical gold in existence in terms of being mined. And there may be another 4 or 5 swimming pools worth of it in the crust still to be extracted or potentially extracted from gold mines.
So I take your point. So, I mean, that fluctuates in value. It doesn't mean the currency necessarily does, but there would be some sort of relationship, wouldn't there? If you were entirely backed by gold and gold were losing value, then your currency would devalue.
This is what actually brought the international gold standard, because Bretton Woods, the original foundation of Bretton Woods, which was not Keynes's idea, it was Harry Dexter White's idea. The American dollar was worth $35 would buy you 1 ounce of gold. Now, these days, what you think is $2,000 or $3,000 for an ounce of gold, but that being back then $35. And what then happened was, and this is something which Yiannis Varoufakis explains very well in the Global Minotaur, to enable the American dollar to be used in international trade, there had to be international American dollars in circulation internationally. That meant that America ended up running a trade deficit and paying for the trade deficit with its own dollars. And ultimately, that meant the accumulation of American dollars, which led to the euro-dollar market. But in particular, in France under de Gaulle, this is back in the time of Richard Nixon, 1971-72, American dollars that had accumulated in the French treasury was more than the total amount of gold in Fort Knox. This is something, it was common knowledge in my youth, because I was 17 in 1970, but that in 1971-72, when the break occurred, it was because de Gaulle threatened to send all of France's accumulated American dollars to Fort Knox and say, we want all the gold in Fort Knox. And so to stop that happening, that's why we went off the gold.
But Zimbabwe is saying, well, no, we are going to make sure that we keep the same amount of gold to match the value of our currency, which then gets back to that problem. Well, okay, what happens if your currency increases in value? Does that mean you then have to go and acquire more gold? And how are you going to do that if you've got a balance of trade deficit? Which is the unanswered question in all of this. The unfortunate thing is that Zimbabwe, I mean, their number one export is actually gold. So it's a bit of a problem if they are hanging on to the currency, hanging on to the gold for their currency, rather than
they can't export as much gold.
They can't exactly. So you know, they hit their balance of trade. Mm. You know, so you know, perhaps they're better off just dealing in the US dollar and flogging their gold. But anyway, it would be nice if it was used for something more useful, wouldn't it, really? Their other export is tobacco, which is flagging in popularity as well. So I think they need to rethink their industrial strategy a bit. But look, when we come back, more generally, why gold? You know, why do we hang on to it? Why do people? And the reason why I think this is interesting, I had a lunch with a mate of mine, and he was saying, you know, why is gold going up so much? And I said, oh, well, people turn to gold during for whatever reason. They think it's a good thing to buy when there's times of geopolitical uncertainty, like we're seeing in the Middle East right now. And he says, oh, well, I wish you'd know, you know, I wish I'd known sooner so I could have bought gold. And that seems to be the idea, doesn't it? People want to get in and buy it because they think it's going to be a good deal. And then they hang on to it and it loses value and they forget about that. But anyway, why gold? Why this preoccupation with gold? We'll look at that when we come back on the Debunking Economics podcast. It's me and Steve Keen back in a moment.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is the Debunking Economics podcast with Steve Keen and Phil Dobby.
So we are looking at gold. We've looked at the Zimbabwe situation, but in this second part, we're going to look more generally had the role that gold plays now that we don't have a gold reserve, apart from clearly in Zimbabwe now, for however long that lasts. But we've still got, Steve, central banks with big gold reserves. So the US has got those swimming pools you're talking about. I think the US has got a few of those. I had this idea of a gold-plated swimming pool. I was thinking that's rather ostentatious, isn't it, really? Something you'd see. You're in Sydney at the moment. It would be the eastern suburbs of Sydney, wouldn't it? Would have a gold-plated swimming pool, I should imagine. So the US has got 8.1 million tonnes of gold. Germany has got 3.4 million. These are in the central bank reserves. Italy's got 2.5 million. A little less in France. 2.3 million in Russia. 2.2 million in China. 1 million.
A million or billion, by the way?
Million. Tons, this is.
Million? Yeah. Tons. Pardon me.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Still, billions, therefore, in value.
Yeah, yeah, in tons. Yes, yeah. So it's pretty, yeah, quite a lot of weight. 1 million in Switzerland, just 845,000 in Japan, only 310,000 in the UK compared to the 8.1 million in the US. Less than 80,000 in Australia, for example. It doesn't seem to have any impact on how well a country does it? How much gold they're having? So this is just literally legacy gold, isn't it? You know, it's just there because from the days of the gold standard, in which case, why don't the bigger central banks just sell it? Why are they hanging on to it?
Oh, partly because they need to have a range of assets backing their, you know, not the central bank's reserves here, but the government's overall valuation. And they'll have, I mean, they have foreign bonds, they'll have, you know, a range of assets, and gold as an asset can appreciate. and it's one, therefore, that they'll have part of that is sort of balancing the risk of, you know, some currency that holding some foreign currencies going up in value or down in value and so on. Gold is, in that sense, a hedge.
But it does go up and down, doesn't it? I mean, it's in some ways, it's almost predictable that it goes up in times of geopolitical uncertainty, then it goes back down again.
Well, this is when gold actually was a form of currency, and this is where David Graeber's research is so useful, because people have this mythical idea that before we had fiat currencies, we used to use gold or silver as a form of currency. And when, with David's research into the history of the, when gold was and was not used as a currency, gold tended to be used as a currency during periods of enormous geopolitical conflict. So then this is sort of looking at Europe, and is the main place where it happened, of course. If there was the War of the Roses, the 30 Years' War, the 100 Years' War, that's when gold was used, because you had all these warring tribes of Europe, and they're the most...
People were worried about having a currency that would be worthless, sure, because the losing side's currency wouldn't be worth anything.
Well, the wars were ended up being fought by mercenaries. They were religious wars, Protestant versus Catholic, that sort of thing. But people fighting it as mercenaries, you would not accept payment in your king's, the king you were fighting for's currency, because if the battle was lost or the king was killed, the currency was going to be worthless. So you insist on a payment in gold.
But there are people who still think like that, though, aren't there? That they see it as the doomsday currency, that, you know, if something goes badly wrong with the world, like we have nuclear war or whatever, they'll be all right because they've got gold. Yeah. But I'm not really quite sure if they're keeping it in gold coins underneath their mattress. I have a funny feeling that they're keeping it in ingots in a bank somewhere, in which case that's no bloody good, because when the nuclear annihilation happens, they probably won't be able to get to the bank fast enough and get access to their bank deposit box.
So you get people hoarding the damn stuff.
I think they're deluding themselves a little bit.
I mean, the interesting question is, you mentioned why gold, and maybe at that point even why silver? The reason is that, you know, we, first of all, they're elemental. They're things which, you know, we can't make elements. Do you know actually how gold is made?
No idea. Comes from the ground.
I mean, literally, made.
It's melted.
Well, where did it come from before it hit the ground? And the answer is that gold is at the very bottom of the periodic table, in the sense of the amount of energy that's lost by the bonds between the neutrons and protons in the nucleus. And you look at the light end of the spectrum, if you combine two hydrogen atoms, you generate helium, and helium has less mass than the two atoms of hydrogen that were fused together to create it. So there's energy released. At the other end, you have uranium, and if you split uranium into two elements, the two elements have less mass than the uranium. So again, energy is released in that fission process. Gold, lead, and silver are right at the very bottom, where you've actually got to add energy to make them be created. And gold is the most inert of all of them. But the way that gold, according to astrophysicists, the energy required to make gold is only generated when you have a collision between two neutron stars. So two enormous, incredibly dense objects have to collide with each other. The collision generates so much energy that it fuses lighter elements into gold, and a range of all the ones going out to uranium as well. But that then explodes, blasted through the universe, become part of a cloud around a star, and ends up with becoming deposits on the planet. So that's how you make gold. You crash two neutron stars together.
Right. And so that's why we like it, because it's physical and we can see it, and it's impossible to recreate. So
it's not chemically reactive either. This is the other thing, like you wouldn't have sodium, for example, because if you threw sodium in water, you'd have an explosion. Put gold in water, nothing happens. So it's the very inertness of gold is why it becomes that sort of reference commodity that can't be damaged by the passage of time.
So. And I guess that answers the question about why would you pick gold then rather than something which is more universally available? Because there's only a handful of countries that effectively can mine gold, and it makes them rich. But it's curious, isn't it?
Once you put it away somewhere, it'll still be there when you come back, as long as you haven't been robbed. Whereas you put iron somewhere, you're going to have You know, if you have rust.
I mean, if we had lots of it, we'd be making cars out of gold, wouldn't we? Everything would be made out of gold. But we wouldn't have that problem with rust. But I mean, it would be nice, wouldn't it, if we use gold for something useful rather than just saying this is a store of value? Because in the end,
it is used in part,
obviously in electronics, and it's used in dentistry as well, of course, because of its, you know, it's got great conductivity, hasn't it? Which is why it's used in electronics a great deal. But I mean, as a small percentage of the total amount of gold that's used. But I mean, just the idea that we spend money to buy something that it just sits there as an asset class, as an investment that's doing no good, but it's making some countries very rich because they go to all the effort of mining it just so somebody can feel as though they're rich because they've got something which is holding value for them. It just seems a bit wrong, doesn't it?
It's actually, I've forgotten, I think it was a leader of a progressive party in Italy back in the days when we thought there might be a revolt against the euro out of Italy, and forgotten the name of the actual party, but it was founded by a comedian, and a very intelligent comedian, and he used to make a joke about how crazy it was to use gold as a form of money, because you find a mine and you dig it out of the mine and then you refine it together so you've got to take it out of the hole in the ground and then just keep it safe and put in a hole in the ground called a safe. Okay, so you're doing nothing with it. And in that sense, the fact that you do nothing with it is why it's got this appeal, which is paradoxical. It's silly in that sense. And then when you look historically and people thinking we've always used gold, is that it's only periods when you can't trust that the local social system you're part of is going to persist. That's when gold gets used.
Right. But I mean, isn't that just a fallacy these days? Because, I mean, as I said earlier, if you're thinking that the whole world's going to go to just a gooey mess, a nuclear winter and we're all striking to survive, gold's not going to make any difference to you.
Does make difference is lead.
Yeah, because you can protect yourself from the nuclear radiation. Yeah, at least
something that travels at about 2,000 kilometres an hour and can be used to shoot somebody to take away their gold. The real reason that the gold is effective, and this comes back again, all the conflicts during the European conflicts, the War of the Roses, blah, 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 those wars, with the gold gave you the capacity to buy guns with which you could shoot people, and therefore you could then say you're going to give me your resources because I've got lead back in those days it would have been swords and bows and arrows and so on, but that's the real reason. It gives you the way to accumulate physical power, and that's why it becomes accepted when there's still a form of conflict that can give you some form of society. Now if we go to the sort of horrific expectations about where human civilization is going to go courtesy of climate change. In that world, it's going to be how many guns you can accumulate that are going to determine whether you can take stuff away from other preppers who maybe are trying to survive the whole apocalypse.
Well, there we are. There's American supremacy.
Gold will be irrelevant. If you've hoarded guns already, you're ahead.
Yeah. Exactly. It is. Completely right. Who cares about how much gold you have? If you've got gold coins in the post-apocalyptic world, it doesn't matter if someone's going to shoot you anyway, does it? But, I mean, since 2019, spot gold has gone up 85%. And some of that has been inspired by the Middle East war, which has induced this spike that we've been seeing lately. I mean, I just don't get why we think that it's worth investing to such an extent to speculate so much to see these spikes during times of uncertainty that we know from experience, from time and time again, will calm down and gold will come down again. It's just a speculator's game.
Yeah, but that's the whole idea of speculating markets. One of my sisters worked for a broker and for a part-time job when she came back from being overseas, and she tells the tale of having as a secretary role but being a damn sight smarter than most secretaries, asking one of the traders what the trader thought the inflation rate was going to be, for example. What number do you expect? And the answer was, I don't care so long as it's big. Positive or negative. And so the thing is, if my gold's going up or going down, you actually want the volatility as part of being a trader.
Yeah, exactly. And according to the World Gold Council, Russia is now the second largest producer of gold in the world, almost 325 tons last year, and they are upping their production. So we've got, the West has said, we're not going to buy from Russia, but everybody else is. They're producing more than they ever have. And that means that, you know, that they're selling their gold at a price which has increased because of global uncertainty, which they're helping to create. And that explains why their economy grew by, 36%? The gold component. What does it? I'm trying to think, this can't be right. I must have these figures wrong. But anyway, they are, I think, 3.6% their economy grew by last year. And 6% of GDP is now going on military spending. 6% of that. So our love of gold and our speculation in gold because of geopolitical uncertainty is being used to fund geopolitical uncertainty because it's funding Russia to kill people in Ukraine. That is how fucked the nation, you know, the world economy is, basically.
And that's actually where people, you look at Tolkien's work in the Lord of the Rings and so on, part of that involved a dragon who accumulated gold, and the whole, you know, desire in life was to have as much gold as possible to sleep with. And Tolkien was using that as a parody of the attitude of the governments of the world to accumulating gold and saying, what a waste of time it is to make that the object of your international relations.
Yeah, and yet we're seeing that, aren't we? So, I mean, that's because it's not just Zimbabwe. No. Supposedly, the BRICS nations are also accumulating gold. This part of the reason it's not just the uncertainty in politics, which is driving up the price of gold. Well, it's sort of linked that, you know, that the BRICS nations are investing in gold as well to supposedly back their currency. You know, talk about whether it's going to be used to back a BRICS currency, which I think we've talked about in the past. But we've hit problems talking about it today. How do you expand the money supply if your money supply is tied to a finite resource? If you're running a balance of trade deficit because you can't buy the gold to back any growth that you have in the money supply, which you need to see the economy grow.
Yeah, and like a lot of international conflict came out of that. So people often there's a very common myth, particularly in Austrian so-called economic circles, where people think it will be, everything would be happily hunky-dory if we use gold and have a commodity, meaning that you can't have the creation of money by the governments or by banks, and that'll be a better world. Look at how great the 19th century was. Then you take a look at the 19th century, and it was massive numbers of political conflicts against other nations, potentially caused by partially contributed to by gold in the way you're describing for recent geopolitical events. And when you look at the number of what they used to call depressions, not just recession, but depressions, there were far more in the 19th century, particularly in America, than there have been since the days of fiat currency and floating exchange rates. So the idea that those were stable periods when you use gold was just completely wrong.
So here's an answer for Zimbabwe. You know, just trade in the US dollar for now, because you probably won't get much confidence in your own currency till you get confidence in your economy. If you've got lots of gold that you're digging out of the ground and it's of a certain quality, then train yourself in making some of the world's best jewelry and add value to the gold that you're getting. Become known as a creator of things of beauty rather than just blocks of gold, and build up a positive trade balance by exporting fantastic jewelry, the gold that you're digging out of the ground. And then, you know, you've got a balance of trade surplus, then you can start to develop your own sovereign currency. What about that for an industrial strategy for Zimbabwe? They can have that for free.
Well, I mean, the thing in China's culture is to have gold on your body as a sign of your relative wealth. Same in Thailand. So I've got a certain personal
there's the market for
awareness
of
that, yeah. Whether you could actually get, you know, enough. I mean, if you do too much of it, gold, it's got to be rare. This is the other thing. It has to be something which is rare. And that's why, again, the reason why gold is the point of reference for people who believe that money should be a commodity, because it's the rarest metal. And but if you then have everybody trying to wear it in an ostentatious show, and you're all doing it, you've got to be walking around with 10 pounds of gold hanging off your ears to show that you're richer than somebody else.
Yeah, we all end up looking like Jimmy Savile, and we don't want that to happen, do we? All right, very good. So there we are. It's a nonsense, though, isn't it, really? It's there. And it won't change. The attitude won't change for the reasons that people see it's solid, it's reliable, and, you know, as you've described, it doesn't devalue itself in any way, doesn't corrode, it's always there. So you can put it away, and in that nuclear winter, you can get your gold ingots out and go, yeah, I'm not quite sure what I do with this, I wish I'd bought a gun. But anyway, good to talk, Steve. I'll catch you again next week. Thank you.
Okay, bye. Yeah.
The Debunking Economics Podcast.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you've enjoyed listening to Debunking Economics, even if you haven't, you might also enjoy The Y Curve. Each week, Roger Hearing and I talk to a guest about a topic that is very much in the news that week. It's lively, it's fun, it's informative. What more could you want? So search The Y Curve in your favorite podcast app or go to ycurve.com to listen.